Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During today's program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planning professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial. If you don't want to see me, did a full 180, crazy, thinking about the way I was. Did the heartbreak change me? Maybe. But look at where. Welcome back to another edition of Dollars and Cents with Mark and Marion. We are here. It is the end of February. Well, no, it's March right now, isn't it?
Yes.
2 months have passed.
Yes, March 3rd.
We are into 2023. Hopefully, we're turning the corner on winter. You know, Marion, last week we joked about the fact on Wednesday that we hadn't seen any snowfall.
Yeah.
And the
joke's on
us. And then the story appeared on Friday, and here we are with snow a day later.
Right. But, and Friday was a miserable day.
It was absolutely miserable.
Yep.
But,
so we got to watch what we say.
Yeah. So understand that when we do these shows for you, we're taping usually on a Wednesday and you're hearing it on a Friday. So who knows what can happen in between, right?
Exactly. Well, I understand it's going to rain now and we're going to lose all the snow that's here, which is fine with me.
Fine with me too. But
although it is pretty.
I was watching the news last night and it looks like here in Massachusetts, this is the third or fourth lightest snowfall for the winter in recorded history.
Yeah, I wish they wouldn't say that because, you know,
March we're going to get dumped on, right?
Exactly.
Oh, here comes the 30-inch storm on April 1st.
Remember that?
We did have that.
I remember that.
I remember that very well.
God. And 2 days later, the kids were out in shorts.
That's right.
Playing on the snowbanks.
Yep.
Anyways, we digress.
We do digress. And, you know, just as the weather is unpredictable, so too are the markets. How's that for a transition?
That's very good, yeah. Mark.
So, you know, we started off 2023 with the S&P 500 doing quite well, actually. In fact, the numbers here that I got from Y Charts today show that the S&P 500, believe it or not, in 2023 was up 6.18%. Yet for the month of February, it is down 2.61%. So as excited as you were about opening your January statement, probably not going to be so excited about opening the February statement.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? That's the way markets go, right? And one of the things that we always look at is, you know, an average annual rate of return over the course of the year could be anywhere from 6 to 8%, say, if you have a well-diversified portfolio. So, you know, had the year ended at the end of January, we would have
been all set. Just make it a 30-day year, right?
Right, exactly.
So, but to show how ridiculous that planning is, when you really think about it and say, okay, we're shooting for, you know, when we're building a portfolio, let's say it's 60-40 stock funds to bond funds, we're shooting around 6 to 8. But the right. S&P 500, if you had just invested 100% in the stock market, in the S&P 500, that unmanaged index of 500 stocks, well, let me give you a rundown of what the monthly performance of the S&P 500 has been over the past 12 months. Because on average, people talk about, well, you know, the stock market does what?
It was 6 to 8%.
No, but the S&P 500 does a little bit higher than that.
Right, exactly. So the S&P 500 is probably 8 to 10%.
8 to 10%, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So how would you predict? And oh, and the other thing that we told you in a previous show was if you go back almost 90 years and you look at the year-to-year performance of the S&P 500 and where it's averaged, on average, if you add them all up, it comes out to like 8.5%, 9%, something like that. But on average, how many times during a one-year period of time does the S&P 500 actually produce
that,
a number between 5 and 10%? And the answer was only 7 times in the last 90 recorded years.
Crazy.
So take a look. Here is the monthly performance numbers. Starting, if I go back to end of February of 2022, and we move forward. End of February 2022, the S&P 500 was down 3.14%. In March, it was up
3.58%. In April, it was down 8.8%. In May, it was 0.01%, pretty much flat. In June, it went down 8%. In July, it went up 9%. In August, it was down 4.2%. In September, it was down 9.34%. In October, up 8%. In November, up 5.38%. In December, down 5.9%. January, up 6.1%. And this month, down 2.6%. How is that any type of a predictability factor on what the market will do?
There is none. And that's why we always say, don't watch it on a monthly basis, number one. And second of all, have a well-diversified portfolio and treat it as a long-term horizon.
Absolutely.
That's all you can do.
Yeah, this is not speculating. This is not guessing.
No.
We're trying to build that well-balanced portfolio that will produce good rates of return that align with your goals and objectives over time, not in 2 weeks, not in time for the 6 o'clock right. news.
I mean, it would be lovely to get that 6 to 8% a year where we got 0.5% up every single month.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's never going to happen.
Absolutely. So, well, if you want to get up, 0.3% every month consistently, well, that doesn't sound exciting. What could you do?
Bank CD.
Bank CD right now is offering 4 to 5%.
Right.
But you're not getting 5% a month.
No, you're not.
You're getting up 0.3%. And chances are you're not going to see that on your statement monthly either, are you?
No. And a lot of those one-year CDs, it depends how they're structured, but many of them only pay interest at the end of the year. So you get your 4%, but you just don't get it until after the 12 months are up.
Right. And now, look, we have always said that it's important that you have some money in the bank.
Absolutely.
Probably 6 to 8 months' expenses sitting in the bank.
That's correct.
But the money that you're not going to touch, money that you're going to add to, or even money that you need to rely upon for income, should probably be invested with a long-term strategy that's appropriate to your goals and objectives. And that's what we do here. Especially in retirement, you need to figure out the strategy that works. But what we're seeing, Marion, here in our office lately, is the fact that many people are a little bit more careful about how they're spending their money, or part of the money that they're spending is being used to support their adult children. Maybe you'd like to share some stories about some things that we're seeing here at the office.
Yeah, it really is amazing. There are so many of our clients, and well, actually, I should say, our clients are split equally when you look at whether or not they want to leave inheritances to their children. So many of them will say, I absolutely, positively have to leave something to my children.
And they often have a number in mind. I want to leave $1 million or $2 million dollars,
exactly.
Or whatever.
And then the other half of the clients say, you know what? I gave my children a great upbringing. I helped them out to get a good start in life. This money is for, us to spend, to enjoy what's left. Happy to give it to my children. But we're going to enjoy our retirement and the remainder of our lives.
I think for those that are listening to this, I would ask you to inquire with your friends when you're out for dinner right now, when you go out for dinner one night and you say, in retirement, is your thought, I'm going to spend whatever the heck I want, whatever's left over, it goes to the kids. Or I'm going to be careful about what I spend in retirement so that our kids could have a better life than we do.
Yeah.
And I think you will find very different perspectives. Even from your closest friends, they will think differently about how they handle their money than you do.
Most definitely. And what's enlightening is those who are adamant about leaving money to their children, some of them have actually supported adult children throughout their lives, mm-hmm. That they help pay for their grandchildren's expenses or in some way, shape, or form. They've helped out their kids. Sometimes it's in times of dire need, and that's perfectly appropriate. Other times it's just to supplement their income. That doesn't always work out well. Sometimes that works out such that, once the parents are gone, the kids inherit the money, and now it's all theirs. They don't know how to budget. What do they do with this money? Great, I have a windfall. I'm going to spend it all now. There's nothing left, even though the parents anticipated, great, this will help them in retirement. This will give them a comfortable retirement. They'll stretch it out over their lifetime. That may not happen. I mean, you can't control that.
No, we deal with 20 deaths a year in this office. Sadly, that, but you know, look, we've been doing this for a long, long time.
Right.
So, you know, we deal with 20 deaths every year. And oftentimes it first starts with the surviving spouse having to deal with this money that's left over, income streams, and having to manage it. But when the second spouse passes away and it goes to the kids, many of the kids, the kids generally have different perspectives on how they're going to handle the money and different expectations about how quickly they're going to get the money too, don't they?
Yes, that's for sure. They expect that immediately they're going to come in and just get a check. Once they have a death certificate, we'll issue them a check for whatever's here. And that it doesn't work like that. It is a great deal of paperwork. And, you know, once beneficiaries have to be verified, and there are a variety of different complexities that have to happen.
And each of the children who are beneficiaries of many of these assets have different expectations on how they'll use the money.
That's very true. And as a matter of fact, you know, I will even say myself, my son does not make the same decisions about money that my husband and I do, for sure. You know, he has a different perspective. Rightly so, that's fine. He can spend his money as he wishes. But, you know, if we leave him an inheritance, he's probably not going to spend it the way I might expect him to spend it or the way I might spend it. And I think that's the case for most people. So keep that in mind. If you think your kids are going to save that money and or spend it on their children or whatever it might be, they might have very different ideas.
Yeah, the issue of honoring our parents' wishes and being sentimental with things that generations before us left has dramatically changed.
My son also tells me, I don't want any of that crap.
Right. No one wants the china. No one wants the Hummels. No one wants the silverware or frankly, even your jewelry,
right,
except for maybe one piece.
Yeah.
And besides that, they want to get rid of it.
That's
and so that sentimentality that you might have about keeping mom's recipes and keeping mom's, you know, pots and pans or serving utensils or scarves or coats or shoes or slippers or whatever it is, sadly, and we see this probably 90% of the time,
yes,
the kids just want it gone. They will happily give it away for pennies.
Or help the homeless or whatever it might be.
Whatever
and
it might
you know
be.
What? It's if it goes to a good cause, all well and good. But don't save it for your kids.
But
they don't want it.
But the same thing happens. It used to be, well, mom left me, you know, 500 shares of General Electric stock. And I remember mom loving the dividend from, well, General Electric pays next to nothing for a dividend these days.
Right.
But you know, oh, I could never sell that stock because that's my sentimental attachment to mom. Your kids are changing that mentality.
Yes.
They are not. If you're thinking that you're leaving, even worse, think about that home in New Hampshire that you have, that place that you bought down in Florida that says, oh, we'll buy the place so that the kids and the grandkids will have a place to come to. They're selling it.
You know, sometimes they can't even afford it.
So that's true, too.
That's one problem. But the second problem is a lot of times they don't live convenient, and that's not what they want to do with their time.
But many parents, and we see this a lot, and I know we're seeing this on a regular basis, is that many of our clients are very generous to their children financially.
Yes.
And it's nice that they are and they want to help them out because, as one person once told me, I'd rather give with warm hands rather than cold ones.
Which is wonderful. If you have excess money that you can well afford to give away and you want to help your kids, fine.
But if your kids aren't building their own personal maturity and financial responsibility around how to spend and budget and plan, whether it's for buying a car, going on vacation, paying for education, and buying a house and managing increased expenses without having to rely upon you as the supplier of,
right.
Someone once called it, Economic Outpatient Service. There was a book called The Millionaire Next Door.
Right.
And they used to call that Economic Outpatient Support. And that was the extra money that kids would expect from you,
right,
to help them to support their lifestyle.
You know, we have seen cases where children have expected and relied upon, very heavily relied upon, monies that their parents would gift every year to pay their mortgages or to, you know, for some basic expenses. And that is not a good scenario to be in.
I remember a story vividly. It was 2008, 2009, during the credit crisis. And we had a client at the time who was retiring November 2008. And as you well know, from November 2008 to March of 2009, the market did not do well.
No.
Not at all. And they were seeing the money that they had just, you know, left in their 401ks or in their IRAs or whatever, it was dropping in value rather quickly. And they were concerned. And they were thinking about how they needed to rechange the way that they were spending the money out of fear that they wouldn't be able to support their lives down the future. Now, granted, the market did turn around and everything was fine. However, on the short-term side, one of the biggest worries that they had to continue to build into their budget was a $30,000 expense to pay for the daycare costs for their grandchildren. And but because both of their children, or that their daughter and son-in-law, both had professional jobs, but, you know, they also lived a very expensive lifestyle. And the cost of daycare was what grandma and grandpa said they would pay for. And it had been that way for a number of years. Well, all of a sudden, grandma and grandpa couldn't afford to roll out $30,000 or $40,000 anymore. And I basically had the conversation with them. It's, you have to either stop doing that or change your lifestyle dramatically during these tough times. And they sat and cried at the table because they said, if we don't pay the daycare costs for our grandchildren, I fear that my daughter will let me see my grandchildren.
Yeah, that's very sad. And
sadly, that's true. It happens.
I know.
Kids have come to expect, what do you mean you can't pay for this? I expect this as part of our budget.
Right. And that, and you know what? Again, long term, that's actually very detrimental to the children.
Absolutely.
Because we have seen so many cases with the parents supporting their children. And once they pass away and the kids inherit the money, it's not enough to continue that.
Absolutely.
For the rest of the children's lifestyle. So those children have gotten used to a very much higher lifestyle that they will never be able to afford in retirement.
Yeah, so one of the things that I find fascinating, and we got to wrap things up here, is that, you know, when you're thinking about your financial future, most of the time, it's not about the type of investments that you own, is it?
No.
We rarely talk about whether you should own this fund or that fund or this stock or that bond. It's not about that at all. It's about the psychology and the emotions around managing the expectations of money.
And all, yeah, absolutely. There's no question.
Yeah. And so we want you to think about that. If now is the time for you to get serious about your financial future, please give us a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or if you'd like to get our newsletter or learn more about Friedman Financial, visit us on, you know, that thing called the interweb or the internet. Just go to friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman.
Two E's and a D.
Financial.com. That's going to do it for us this week. I'm going to take a couple weeks off of doing this podcast. The next 2 weeks, you get Marion and Christian, our director of financial planning, will be joining you on these podcasts. So stay tuned.
I'll be here.
Yeah, Marion will lead us, and enjoy financial advice in a language you can understand. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. I'm all good already, so moved on. It's scary. I'm not where you left me at all. So if you don't want to see me dancing with somebody, dancing with somebody. If you
Thank you for listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planning planner, tax professional, or attorney prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA and SIPC.